Everybody knows when it comes to online shopping that Amazon.com is the bomb. Get the best deals on everything you shop for online and help support Rob Has a Podcast. When you start your shopping using our link, robhasawebsite.com/Amazon. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who never knew just how deadly watching Rock of Love could be, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to our continuing coverage of Whodunit with the one and only Kurt Clark. Kurt, how are you?
I'm doing great, Rob. How are you doing?
Doing okay, Kurt. Oh, my God. Not Dawn.
No.
Not Dawn.
That was your pick, wasn't it?
That was my pick. And I said, okay, Dawn must be playing coy here because there's no way that Dawn, the crime scene investigator, could be so inept. And then when I saw him once again in the bottom two, I said, there's no way Dawn could know less than Dana, who knows nothing. Who relies on everybody to just tell her what happened. There's no way Dawn could be that bad. The high school coach, my butt. And sure enough, no. Dawn is the latest victim of the whodunit killer.
Yeah, I mean, my pick from last week, Dana, was in the bottom two with your pick. And so it was kind of a reckoning one way or the other. One of us was going to kind of fall out of that.
Yeah, well, it was a very sad night. All right, so a lot to get to here on this Whodunit podcast. We're going to talk about episode number 3 of Whodunit, and quite a bit. I'd like to talk a lot about the, you know, as we're understanding more and more of the game, what is the impact of having a social game on Whodunit, and that really loomed large in episode 3. Plus, Kurt has been reading the Whodunit book available on abc.com, and Kurt's going to have some details for us. And then later on in the show, we're going to touch on another show that's sort of in this odd reality show phase that we're in, summertime reality TV. Going to talk a little bit about NBC's Siberia, which has aired one episode last Monday night, and episode 2 is going to be on next Monday night. So if you want to, very interesting show. We'll talk about that at the end of the show. But Kurt, how are you doing this evening? Thank you for avoiding the whodunit killer for another week.
I'm doing pretty good. Looking forward to dissecting what happened with Adriana, and very excited to kind of share what I've learned about this whodunit book with the listening audience.
All right, well, let's start off with talking about this idea of the social game on Whodunit, as the sort of like the mechanics of the game are beginning to emerge here through 3 episodes. So in the beginning, we said, okay, we get it, that the idea is to sort of make an alliance. But I guess it turns out that you want to sort of, you know, have some social graces here with your alliances. I take it that the Hanses would not do particularly well on Whodunit because apparently Cam turned off a lot of people last week.
Yeah, and what is it you say about Survivor, and you need kind of the ultimate player has a strong social game, a strong strategic game, and a strong physical game. I think it might be the very same thing here, where you kind of have to have that strong strategic game, which we talked about last week, and the idea of how important at least a threesome is. But you can't have that strategic group and still kind of socially turn off everybody else. I'm not sure about the physical game. Maybe that's more of like a intelligent or investigative or perceptive game. But at least adding that strategic element and that social element seems to be key here.
Yeah, you want to basically be the kind of person that people like to share their information with. And if you are standoffish about the information that you have, apparently it really turns people off from giving you the information.
Yeah, and apparently Lindsay is that player, apparently.
Yeah.
Or at least she was this week. It looks like everybody was her winning, quote-unquote winning this week, may spell doom for her next week in terms of people being willing to share info with her.
Yes, Lindsay was like the proverbial Cochrane in the middle of the two alliances, playing both ends against the middle, even though she did end up defecting against her alliance of four to go with the bigger group. Now, on Survivor, we would say this was a very poor decision to go to a bigger group, but I guess, does she feel like she's leaving an alliance of four for an alliance of three?
I think what she's seeing is that there's a group where you have four people sharing information versus seven. She would potentially be part of seven people all sharing information with each other. And I think she just liked her chances better in that larger group where more information was being shared.
Yeah. Now, what's in it for Ronnie to be in an alliance with Lindsay? What does Lindsay bring to the table? Besides that, apparently she knows everything, and I don't even understand how.
I don't know. I think maybe, again, it's just the social game, and she likes her. So I don't know what she's bringing to the table from a what information she was able to share necessarily. But in terms of, it seemed like they just got along socially. Although he was, the look on his face, and he was definitely staring daggers at her across the dining room table when she basically got the top score from the killer.
Yeah, I got to give credit to Cam and Ulysses and Chris this week, because I thought the writing was on the wall for them to all be, for one of them to be murdered this week after they did not have the key pieces of information, and somehow their threesome was still better than the people who were sort of on like the bottom rungs of the Ronnie alliance. So right. I think you were better off to sort of be your own sort of threesome and not rely on the information to flow downhill than to just be like number six and seven in the totem pole on the Ronnie alliance.
Right. And it looks like Ronnie's also coming under fire in terms of he wasn't forthcoming with enough information for, again, it was the two people in his alliance who were on the bottom two. And I don't know if it was intentionally not sharing or was it more of a, here's what I think I'm getting to the point, and here's what the people need to know that's most important. So I'm not sure how much of it was actually kind of planned with malice versus just kind of leaving information off the table accidentally.
Well, I thought it was a really interesting dynamic in the episode that happened where you had the two groups, but when Ronnie got the one piece of information, you know, he didn't really go to everybody in the group and say, okay, everybody, here's what's going on. And I felt like that Ronnie, at the start of the episode, felt like his goal was to get one of the strong players out of the game. So if that was what he wanted to do, why not go to every single person in the group and tell them exactly what they need to know? And basically, and because he had that one piece of information, make sure everybody on his side knew what was up and not to tell Cam and Ulysses and Chris and get one of them out of the game.
Right. Or alternatively, and this will relate a little bit more when I kind of talk about the book, what I thought was going to happen was actually there being misinformation spread. So rather than clam up and let them kind of figure things out on their own, throw in some misinformation, a little bit better than the whole St. Agnes, St. Agatha, St. Abercrombie issue from last week. But actually thinking about what can we tell them that's going to be plausible that they're not going to know and that is going to potentially actually mislead them versus just leave them in the dark searching for a flashlight.
I also thought it was an interesting thing that happened. So after they all gave their deposition and then they had the big dinner, so basically, like, Dana, the eternally indignant Dana, who is probably my least favorite person on the show, because all she does is just sit around and be like, what? You knew that and you didn't tell me? What? She doesn't do anything on her own. She never investigates anything. Her during the riddle portion of the game tonight, she decided she was going to stay and guard the TVs. Like something was going to, like there was going to be looting at Rue Manor and somebody was going to steal the TVs. But she doesn't, it was the same thing with Ulysses last week, that she just sat around and expected Ulysses to tell her what was going on. And the same thing with Ronnie this week. She felt like she was going to tell Ron, she's like a floater in this game, and unfortunately it does not involve numbers, so there's no point of keeping her around.
Right, and I personally like Dana just because of that drama that she actually brings to the table. I mean, in this game, again, we're only into week three, but again, it's not going to be, I'm guessing not a 13-week season, but there's very few people that we have a kind of a snapshot of their character, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But I think we have a good grasp on Cam, and I think Dana is another one that we kind of have like an interesting grasp on. Is she the most useful contributor? I'm not going to say yes to that.
Well, what does she bring into the table for you, Kurt?
Just a little bit of a different, I think, emotion to the game in terms of, again, that indignance that you mentioned. I think that that's actually just kind of a funny contrast to how everybody else is playing the game. Otherwise, you just have, I think, potentially... Well, we have like 11 people now or 10 people now. Well, with Dawn gone, but potentially 9. I think it's just an interesting, different character. Again, if this was a story, but in terms of gameplay, I'm not sure what she's thinking.
Yeah. I thought it was odd, though. So at the dinner, then they sat around, and then so Dana is, of course, indignant that Ronnie had this piece of information that he didn't give to her, and Cam takes Ronnie's side in this conversation and says he didn't have to tell you anything, which I felt like, for one, I wholeheartedly agree with. But going back to the social game, it seems like a missed opportunity to say, yeah, Ronnie, how come you didn't tell Dana what was going on? That you guys are on my case about doing that same thing, and now here you are, and you guys are supposed to be, this socialistic sort of information-sharing network, yet you didn't share that piece of information with her. I felt like that it was a missed opportunity for Cam to drive a wedge on Ronnie's side, whereas that Cam took so much heat in this episode from people who were saying that his group was just not sharing information with the other people.
Right. Or at the even, you see some mistrust between the Cool Kids Alliance and...
They need a name. They need an alliance name.
Quattro has already been taken at some point.
No, it's more of a trio now.
What I was saying is, well, with them not trusting Lindsay, that would also have been a good opportunity to potentially bring in Dana. Like, especially if she is, or at least use Dana as a double agent of some sort.
Yeah. Well, you're implying that there's a use for Dana. Watch, she's the killer. Oh, then she's the killer. And then it's like, that's what I can't get my head around. That, oh, yeah, Dana, who was, inept the whole season, turned out she was the mastermind of this whole show.
But that's technically, I guess, one way you could play it is bring somebody into your fold. You've got Chris and Cam and Ulysses. You bring in Dana, and I'm putting like heavy air quotes around bring in. And so she, feels complete trust in this group, completely pump her with misinformation and let your actual allies know the truth. And basically you're bringing someone in just to kind of toss them up to the killer so that they completely tank it during the deposition, as you called it. Well, that's one way to potentially play it.
What I do think is that what you could do is, let's say you had somebody like, and we're picking on Dana a little bit, but let's say, okay, so Kurt, you and I, we're the, we feel like we're the best players, and then there's, somebody else that we think, we think we want to get Ronnie out of the game. So here's Dana. We know she's just fodder for the killer. If she doesn't get killed this week, she's going to get killed next week. Why don't me and you take her in with us? Make her in our alliance. We tell her all the correct information. We keep her from getting killed up until the end when it's just us, so we don't have to face sort of the superior competition. And let's knock some of the people who know what they're doing out of this game.
And that's a possibility, but I think it requires people actively trying to knock people out of the game. And
isn't that part of the BR rules, Kurt? Don't you want to bring all the worst people with you to the end?
Oh, I think definitely. I don't know if this is the case where the killer is voting between two people to win.
Hey, you gotta find the killer. You want to make sure you find all the clues and investigate the murder.
What I would like to start seeing happening is when I was actually getting a little bit kind of excited when Ronnie was saying that he was trying to get rid of people. And I was wondering if it was gonna, that was going to be, again, through that idea of active, purposeful misdirection versus simply putting up the blockades in front of the information. I'd like
much
to see
like
more
a
of that
tree
happening.
Branch in the middle of the road.
Yeah, I have a question about that tree branch.
Sure.
And I know we're jumping like right to the crime scene, but so was the purpose of that to steer the golf cart off of the road into did the golf cart basically then get stuck when it went off the road? Is that the deal?
I don't know. Seemed like just nonsense. It just seemed like they needed a reason for the golf cart to be stopped and not just be like rolling along.
Okay.
I mean, I guess that's where the camera was, so the killer was like wanted to get like a good view. But I don't know. There, you know, if it was like part of it was like then she veered off the beaten path because there was a huge log in the middle of the road and her golf cart got stuck in the mud and then she just tried to like, but there was no reason why she couldn't have just kept going once she averted the large log that was in the middle of the path.
Right.
So, yeah, that was a, you know, killer, not quite perfect.
No, it's what we saw in the first murder of Sherry, and we saw it more in this murder too. Again, I think what we're supposed to be seeing here is that the killer trying to mislead people with assumptions about the death. I think in Sherry's case, it was meant to, I think, look initially at first glance like an electrocution mm-hmm. from the aquarium. And here, I think people were supposed to think that it was that she blew herself up trying to open the gate, when in fact there was a deeper story to it.
Yeah.
And so I think it's again kind of peeling back the layers of the onion.
Yes, much like you would on a delicious steak. But we'll talk about that more in a little bit. You know, I was so inspired by Brian Lynch and his great chart on our Big Brother podcast tonight of all the alliances in the house. I feel like I could very easily chart what the alliances are right now on Whodunit, that we have, of course, our threesome of the cool kids. And then on the other side of the aisle, it's like I feel like we have sort of like a two-person alliance with Ronnie and Gino. Yep. But then there's also Ronnie also has an alliance with Lindsay and Melina. That's yep. also a three-person alliance. And then Dana is just kind of off in the ether, sort of in that group, but sort of like a dotted line in between them. And Sasha, I don't really know what her deal is. She just seems to be telling everybody off.
Yeah, telling Lindsay to make up her mind.
Yeah, she's on the side of the paper that has Ronnie and Gino and Melina, but I don't think she has a close ally.
I thought that we saw a little bit last week, though, of Lindsay and Sasha comparing notes and kind of like stepping out of the main room and going into a side hallway and comparing notes and talking. So I think there might be more of a close connection between Sasha and Lindsay than we saw today. I think we saw it in previous episodes, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Although in the very first episode, there was the little bit, the exchange between Sasha and Lindsay at the dinner table after, you know, Sasha won the killer's challenge and Lindsay said, I'm spared. I don't know how that happened. And Sasha said, yeah, no, neither do I. And there was like a little bit of a confessional there where Lindsay was like, I don't know what this girl's problem is. If she stays so cocky, it's going to be the end of her or something like that. So I'm not sure what the relationship is actually with Sasha and Lindsay.
You know,
I retract that.
Yeah, we don't know what Sasha's doing. She's just mad, Sasha. Let's talk through the actual murder and let's make sure we're on the same page. Okay, so all right, so morning comes.
Yep.
And now Adriana is, was she up all night or did she sleep?
They made it sound like she was up all night watching reality TV, couldn't sleep, went down and maybe grabbed an early... I didn't get the impression she was necessarily there from like midnight through 7 a.m., but you got the impression that she got up early because she couldn't sleep and went to have some cereal in the breakfast nook.
Now, am I being a little oversensitive or did you feel like Giles was a little condescending when he brings up reality TV?
I think it was a little condescension But self-referential condescension.
Okay, fair enough. So she's eating the cereal.
And watching her Rock of Love.
Yeah, but somehow this was a DVD of Rock of Love. Like, I didn't understand why it was a DVD.
No, I got the impression that somehow the killer activated the DVD player and the DVD while she in the middle of her watching Rock of Love.
Okay. So, and why was it Rock of Love? Was that just the show that they could get the rights to? I mean, why not The Bachelorette?
You know what? I'm wondering if there's a hidden clue there of some sort that we're not picking up. I mean,
Brett
I actually...
Michaels, Rock of Love. Poison. Poison. She was poisoned.
There you go. I haven't even rewound it just to make sure it was Rock of Love and not a scene from... if this is on ABC, so they wouldn't show a scene from Celebrity Apprentice.
it was clearly Rock of Love.
It was very much. Like, I didn't know maybe it was an apprentice task where Brett Michaels was choosing between models to be a part of some shoot or not. But yeah, no, it was very much Rock of Love.
Yeah.
I'm sad to say I recognize that.
So Adriana watching the Rock of Love, and then all of a sudden she gets a thing like we see like a surveillance camera, but what was on the surveillance camera? Was that her on the surveillance camera? It was like a shot of her.
Yeah, it was her sitting in the breakfast room eating. I think it was supposed to be considered a live shot of some sort,
but it was a DVD.
You know what, that's a good point. Maybe that universal remote that has the big bomb button on it also is able to switch between VH1 closed circuit camera footage and DVD player.
Okay, sure.
I love that the DVD was titled Killer DVD.
Yes, it was a killer DVD. So then she sees the thing, and then it says on the screen, drive off if you want to live. Now, we should have known from Dante last week that you do not follow the direct, like, whatever the killer tells you to do. If the killer tells you to go left, you go right. If the killer tells you to go up, you go down. Stop doing what the killer tells you to do. He doesn't have your best interests. He's a killer.
Correct. And, yeah, she tried to get out of the room. She's like, okay, every door was completely, you know, locked or from the other
side.
Yeah,
now hold on with that. Okay, so... And now we know, like, did the killer, like, have, like, put wet paint on the floor of how come that there were these, like, huge black footprints on the tour?
And the full footprint as opposed to maybe just, like, the tip of the foot?
Yeah, like...
I was wondering, did she, like, actually like, sit on the floor and try to, like... push the door open with both feet at the same time, so the full sole of the... So, yeah, but CSI, this isn't.
Yeah, so they really overdid it with the footprint. So then she gets in the golf cart and runs away, and then down 13 steps.
Yep.
And then tries to... then there's the tree branch, and she tries to open the thing with the clicker, and then the killer eventually just boom goes the dynamite.
She's up in the attic with a popcorn and remote control, watching the closed circuit TV, sees her swerve off the path and stop, and Adriana goes boom.
Yeah. Boy, the killer really, when does the killer have time to set up all of these elaborate Rube Goldberg murders?
I'm guessing sometime between 1 and 3 a.m. He's a light sleeper, the killer.
I would be looking to see who looks like they've been up all night. Who seems exhausted from planning a murder all night and setting up booby traps all over this mansion?
Yeah, it's... I'm trying to think, like, the murders are completely taking place at different times now. Even Dante's was in the middle of the night, and so, you know, that was all that the killer had to do there was prep the bathrobe with the benzene and then hit the fire alarm, and it kind of took care of itself.
I guess so. Sasha seems
a little
cranky. Sasha, it seems like she might not be getting that much sleep.
That's actually a good call.
A little testy.
I hadn't thought of that. Oh, but again, you know, lack of sleep can often make you over emotional as well. So again, I'm looking at Dana.
Dana seemed, no, everybody commented on how well rested Dana looked. She's like, oh my God, you look great.
Well, yeah, but she, well, I was actually surprised too. You mean the morning after she was potentially going to be killed?
Yeah, she was set. How could she have time? Did she look like somebody who was wrangling a bobcat all night?
You know what? I thought all that had to, all that that required was throwing a bobcat in a dumbwaiter. And
where'd she get the bobcat from? She had it in her suitcase.
It was probably in her carry on. You know, maybe it was in the small kennel next to the morgue in the basement.
Perhaps. Okay. So that was how the murder took place. All right. So I have a new top suspect. Now that Don is out of the way, I have a new person who I think is the murderer. I have a new number one suspect.
And who is that?
There seems to be one guy who seems to be throwing everybody off the case, and I think it's Gino. That's my new pick.
Okay.
And he seems to really have it out for a couple people. And I also thought it was odd that he told everybody, hey, remember that Dante and Adriana, they both had deals with Cam and Ulysses, and they ended up being the people that got murdered. And I just felt like that was very odd that he said that. And I don't recall specifically Adriana having a deal with Cam and Ulysses.
Right. That seemed, unless he was just doing everything he could just to throw those guys under the bus.
And he also was very big into the you know, St. Agnes, St. whatever. You know, he seems like the only person who's actively trying to throw people off.
And he was the one that was instructing Melina to actively mess with Lindsay, or to actively associate with Lindsay so that her core other alliance would trust her less. And basically he was trying to drive wedges into the other group as well, using Melina as his tool.
Seems like the mole to me.
It's kind of mole-ish activity, as they would say, on the mole.
Yeah. I don't know. Gino, but it seems like to make the killer the man who's a person of color, like I feel like it's much more likely the producers of the show, you know, make the killer the Dana of the world, the, you know, the Chris of the world, where it's, or, you know, the... You know, Don was a good pick because he was the older guy. But to make it be, you know, Gino, I think would be probably that's not the message that the producers of this show want to give us.
Right. And it's interesting, between like this and the mole, you kind of think that in terms of the producers giving direction to people, the killer slash the mole in the two series, it's not really their role to single out and target anybody to get them out. And so I think that's another thing that we could potentially look at to help identify who the killer is who is the person who is kind of rolling with the punches, but they're not necessarily actively trying to mess with one or two people in particular. Because it seems like that would be something potentially unfair that an insider on the production team as the killer would potentially... You'd want to avoid that situation where they're actually singling out somebody to eliminate.
All right, let's bounce around. Let's do a little rapid fire, and then we'll get to the book.
Okay,
a couple things that I want to hit on. To start the episode, was it just me, or did Giles seem unusually pissed off when he declared lockdown on Rue Manor?
Yeah, well, again, this is the first time... it seems like we've been watching this forever, even though we've only had three full investigations so far. And so you've got the first one where, you know, kind of Giles probably knew that this was coming based on some things that we'll talk about in the book. Then with Dante's death, it was kind of a, you know, fire drill. Everybody, okay, this, you know, where is everybody? Everyone's here. Okay, this happened. And then the next thing was with Adriana's death. I think it was a little bit, maybe it's starting to wear on him. And so now he's just trying to corral everybody together, get things in order. Like, what was it that Wazra says he likes to keep the kitchen tidy. Maybe Giles likes to keep the breakfast nook and the backyard tidy.
Yeah,
everyone go upstairs while I clean.
I mean, I was kind of like, Giles, where's the puns? Where's the witty repartee? All of a sudden, he's like, we are on lockdown right now. Like, oh, all right. Oh, I'm sorry. We weren't expecting a murder this morning?
The guests were the only ones that weren't surprised by it. And
Your rooms immediately.
And you raise a good point that there was, and maybe it was just the manner of the death, there were a couple puns peppered throughout, but not as bad as the whole fire thing last week.
Yeah, maybe it wasn't as fertile for the wordplay.
Yeah, and except I was very much amused by the killer's note saying, Lindsay, I should have killed you for that annoying laugh alone, but for now.
Yeah, killer seems to not care for Lindsay. That means my money is on Sasha. Another signal for Sasha.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay. Was there any reason why the body couldn't be moved to the morgue? I didn't really understand why this time we're just going to, the body has to be, we can fish Dante's body out of the pool, but we can't, we didn't have a ladder to get Adriana's body out of the tree.
Yeah. It's the way that Giles was talking. He made it sound like, Adriana was going to be in bits and pieces all over the backyard. But no, you raised that's a great point. It easily enough, she was just kind of draped over a branch. Probably would have been a lot easier to get her down than to get Dante out of the swimming pool. So that's a strange one.
Yeah, and how far away from the crime scene could she have been? Did she get blown, 500 feet away from, wouldn't you think the people at the, by the tree would be, 10 feet away from the people by the golf cart?
Maybe it was just on the other side of a very discreet hedge.
Maybe.
It was kind of like that visible barrier between the smoking and non-smoking sections.
I wonder if, just in terms of production, I wonder if it makes it seem like on the show the three scenarios are happening simultaneously, but knowing a little bit about production and specifically reality TV production, I wouldn't be surprised if because how many camera crews could they have? Would they have we have three camera, we have nine camera crews today, and we'll split up. You three go with them. You three go with them. Like I'm sure they probably stagger the day and do the first setup and then the second setup and the third.
Well, it's funny you mention that because there is a scene in the book where there is an investigation taking place and. We'll get to this more. The book so closely it's a game in the book, and there is the scene of the crime is a bathroom, but the last known whereabouts were the bedroom that the bathroom is off of, and in this instance, investigators had to actually be staggered, brought into the crime scene, and actually blindfolded as they walked through the bedroom into the bathroom to do their investigation.
Okay, interesting. How about the Gino's big plan on this episode, which worked to perfection of sending Melina to go make it look like she was buddy-buddy with Lindsay?
I like that, although it seemed like there was already distrust from... it seemed like Chris and Ulysses and Cam were already kind of writing Lindsay off anyway. And I think you even pointed out last week that Lindsay was brought in and then Cam brought in Chris... probably asking himself why he brought in Lindsay. So there's already great distrust there. So if Melina talking to Lindsay drove a wedge into that relationship, there was already a huge gap in that relationship to begin with.
Did Cam forget that the buddy system is also one of the BR rules? Should Chris have been accompanying Lindsay at all times to make sure she wasn't defecting or talking to the enemy?
Chris did arrive on the scene a little bit late.
Too late.
And, and I think even the plan was not necessarily to get her to defect or anything. It was just to be around Lindsay and be very friendly around Lindsay. So even if Chris, in this case, the BR rules would have backfired because then Chris would have been there to see Melina being all just friendly with Lindsay and she would have questioned it even more. But I did, in terms of the... there is kind of an interesting buddy system in here in terms of kind of guarding people. I think when they did that puzzle section, it seems like we didn't really see them talk about it. But as people were racing around the house trying to find the clues, it seemed like the larger group of seven had assigned almost like four of them to shadow the people who were in the cool kids group. And again, yeah, it does need a better name than that. But I remember Don was trying to keep up with Cam and follow Cam wherever he went during the whole riddle solving part of the investigation.
Yeah. The sizzling fajitas, was there any significance to this, or was this just sort of a borderline visual pun that really didn't resonate? Was it that supposed to be signify the sizzling of Adriana's skin?
I was wondering that myself, and I couldn't make a strong connection between the dinner and the death. But I do want to point out that I'm having a hard time finding a connection between Adriana and her method, her specific method of death. I know there's a lot of conversation out there about whether or not each person's demise and the way that they go is pre-planned. And I'm just strongly thinking between what we saw with Sherry, we saw Adriana get blown up, we saw Don attacked by a cougar or a bobcat or whatever. I think the fact that Dante went up in flames and the whole Dante's Inferno thing was just a complete coincidence.
Yeah, that is accurate. I, you know, that Twitter makes it so hard to go back and find a tweet, but over, you know, I've gotten a lot of tweets over the past couple days from different people that have been, you know, apparently there's not very many whodunit podcasts out there. So from a few different people who have been associated with the show have been listening to us and have all been very complimentary, and we appreciate it. But somebody who I take it is one of the producers said that it is a coincidence that there was the deaths were not orchestrated by who died.
Right. And I think it's just the natural need for some sort of narrative or story and on part of the listener. So yeah. it was just a happy coincidence. I think we would have seen a lot more reference to it in the show other than one of the contestants saying it if it had actually been planned that
way. It was just a a coincidence.
Yeah, it's like they can't have that bobcat on call waiting for Don's death every time.
And why would Don be a bobcat? If anything, maybe Adriana was a cougar. And then
thinking that too. Well, actually,
they could have taken her out.
It's funny you say that because when the thing I don't like to watch the previews because part of the thing I get out of it. The enjoyment I get from the show is not knowing how the next person is going to die. And I did see the previews for this episode, and it showed that cougar at the end of the thing. And I was wondering, well, either the cougar is what kills the next person at the end of this show, or it's what was chasing Adriana out of the house where she ran to the golf cart.
Yeah.
In which case, I also made that if that was a cougar and it was Adriana's death, it's like, well, maybe she's a cougar. But you know, maybe Don's football team is maybe he coaches the Bobcats.
Okay,
maybe.
I also thought the producers of Whodunit played a little fast and loose with the coming attractions of showing Giles shooting the gun in the coming attractions for this episode, which isn't even something that happened. This episode ended before Giles even shoots the gun. So a little fast and loose with the coming attractions.
Yeah, I mean, he did drop a bomb on the house guest, though.
Yeah, so let's talk about the bomb going off. Giles did not seem particularly concerned about him holding a lit Legend of Zelda-type bomb.
Yeah, I was thinking more like Snidely Whiplash or, you know, Rocky and Bullwinkle type Acme products type bomb.
He didn't have the same gravitas of when he referred to his explosive ankle bracelet from last week.
Exactly. And God bless the contestants for you know that they were directed to, I'm guessing, to act astounded that this bomb is coming in here. I mean, there is an element of acting to it. Obviously, like, for instance, the flashback scene for every person is directed. I think it's fun that these contestants get a chance to kind of do something like that.
Yeah.
So there is that blurring of reality and story. But it was like, we know it's not going to blow up. And just like your comments the first week of the show about, you know, you're not going to die. So, you know, stop freaking out so much. It seemed like a lot of energy put into people reacting and hiding behind couches to, in case the bomb is going to explode.
Yeah. So who was the ham of the night with being afraid of things that aren't actually going to happen? Was it Lindsay or Melina with the bomb? Who was it that was like very nervous about the Giles holding the bomb?
It was Lindsay. It was a little bit of Chris, and I think there was a lot of just open mouth confusion from Ulysses in this episode, actually.
Yeah, Dana also seems very concerned that she's actually going to be murdered.
Oh, yeah. And very teary-eyed many times through this episode.
Yeah. Okay, so was there anything? I feel like there was one other thing that I wanted to get to on this, but if I think of it, we will. Oh, who gets the fishy on this week's episode?
I'm going to have to say, I would give it to Gino.
That's a very fishback like awarding of the fishy to Gino.
You know, he's it's not just because he's a fellow Chicagoan. I got to that's not it. But I was thinking there is something to be said for Cam and team puzzling things out despite not having the full story.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that Ronnie pulled aside Gino he obviously trusts Gino a lot. He dumped a lot of information into Gino's lap in terms of, it almost seemed like, okay, the seven of us are going to share information, but before I just start talking, I want to get my story straight with Gino over here, and then I'm going to tell the group as a whole. And then also, you know, Gino seemed to be the person at the very beginning as people were kind of splitting up to go to rooms, and then when they were regrouping, he seemed to be the person who was kind of galvanizing everybody together who was kind of disparate and separate and kind of in teams of one prior to the splitting up to investigate the area. So
yeah, that's a good call. I would say Ronnie would be the also a good call, but I'll endorse your Gino of the fishy.
But with Ronnie, to me, it was a little bit like using, it's almost like he won the express pass, but there was a fast forward on an amazing race, but didn't actually win the leg.
Yeah.
In terms of he solved the riddle, but he still managed to not get the killer's kudos.
You sold me. Gino got the fishy. Congratulations.
Okay.
Congratulations to Gino.
Trademark that.
Yes. Okay. So, Kurt Clark, so tell us about the Whodunit Murder in Mystery Manor book available on abc.com.
Also available on Amazon.
Oh, okay. Yes. Well, let's set up a link here.
There you go.
Rob has a website.com/ whodunit. We will check out the link and support Rob as a podcast when you purchase the Whodunit book. And yes.
Also available on Audible.
Oh, okay. So audio book. Okay, yeah. Very good.
Yeah, and the full title of the book is Whodunit, Murder in Mystery Manor. And the book starts, I'm not going to give away any spoilers in case anybody wants to read it. It literally, I've got it on my Kindle here. It was 253 pages. I brought it with me. I was on vacation in Vegas this week, and I actually brought it with me in between like the plane ride there and a couple pool sessions and then some like late night reading. I was able to get it done, like read in 3 days. So it's a very, very quick read. But it starts out really giving, we talked about the origin story of Giles, and it's completely true. They spend the first chapter really kind of going into his pedigree, his background in terms of where he grew up, his family, and how he kind of went to the finest schools to learn how to kind of to be a butler, and how he went from a very cushy job in San Diego to this mysterious job where he was just hired by somebody named X to take on a role at a very, very, very good salary, and in a mansion, basically. I mean, there's very little detail about it. It's very mysterious, and so he takes it. And much like the show that we're all watching, it becomes a situation where Giles and the rest of the staff are basically imprisoned in this manner and held hostage by their new boss. And they're informed that there are going to be 10 house guests arriving who are there to play a game of from the killer. And so everybody shows up, and he's under strict orders not to say anything. And again, there's some arm twisting there that they go into the book as to why Giles has to play along, so to speak. But it's very much a situation where there's...
So this is a prequel? This is the events leading up to the people showing up at the house tonight?
Yeah, and actually this is a completely separate story. So the 10 characters in the novel are not the 10 players in the game.
Okay.
But I'll get to that at the end, because there's kind of a potential connection.
This is not the first time that Giles has hosted the whodunit competition.
Exactly. And that's actually very much so. And the people come in, and basically, just like Sherry gets killed, somebody gets killed on the first night. And everything's kind of then that's when Giles starts to explain what's going on through these notes that were left to him by the killer. And I've actually bookmarked some key things again. Hope that, and you'll see that the book very, very, very closely parallels the play of the game. And if anything, I got a better idea of how I'm supposed to be watching the show after having read the book, in terms of what I'm supposed to be, what the actual game is. There's one part of the book where Giles is saying, "And our game must now go on. As I said before, there are rules. You each have a choice ahead of you, a decision that may or may not ultimately seal your fate. After each murder, you'll be granted the opportunity to investigate one and only one of the following areas: the crime scene itself, the victim's last known whereabouts, or the estate morgue where you will find the body and whatever evidence it may hold. Regardless of which area you choose, you may only be given only 30 minutes to investigate the area." So you see there, it completely parallels the play of the game on the TV show. I mean, it's as if they are kind of playing the same game that's being played in the book. And even one point, one of the characters says, it was just like Sherry was actually shot in the back of the neck with a slingshot, as opposed to being electrocuted. At one point, one of the players says, "We're being deceived as part of the game. That's the point, to find out exactly how the killer committed the murder right in front of us all." And then another character in the book says, "So it's more like a how done it and not so much a who done it." And that's really interesting, because I was having a chat with one of the people on your message board, and they actually brought up that various point. So it's not so much a who done it, it's a how done it. And I think that's really, key to what the show is trying to solve. And I still go back to my point that I don't think we're being fed a lot of clues about who the killer is. I think anything that we guess at this point is purely guessed based on our perception of how the person is being portrayed on TV. And again, that point from last week, that even if you knew dead to rights who the killer was, when you're making your accusations, it seems like 90% of it is weighted towards how the murder was done as opposed to who the killer was. So it completely, from that, it even goes into a section on how people are sharing information after the investigation. They're told to use this time to share information that you've learned with one another. The killer is among you, and again, the game cannot have a winner if there are no losers, so be judicious and careful regarding what you have learned, and you can share wisely. And there's even a part where I thought this was really interesting, because this is exactly how we saw it play out in the game during the first few weeks. Each guest knew that in order to survive, someone would need to know less than they did, which meant that if all the guests sat at one table and everyone shared everything they learned, then they'd all essentially have an equal chance of being the next victim. It was likely this logic, in addition to relationships already having been forged, that led to several groups forming across the patio that evening. And they later go, the book goes on to describe kind of what that sharing of information is like. And just like we saw on the show, the guests dined and talked and speculated. Some information was shared, but not nearly as much as any of the guests would have suspected. At least two lies were told, maybe by the killer and maybe not. Mostly the guests merely ate, making small talk and deflecting probing questions. Many spent the time trying to figure out who was in fact the killer. And most conversation gradually shifted away from the crime somehow, even after several guests had switched tables in an attempt to find out more about pieces to the puzzle. So it's really kind of interesting, at least it was interesting to me as I read this, how closely the actions and the kind of the actions on the show and the behaviors of the guests mirrored that in the book. I'm even wondering, maybe we'll find out from some of the folks who are listening, if they were even given the book to read ahead of time, just so they would get an idea of what they'd be getting themselves into. And then from there, it goes into the same sort of puzzle round where they're given some sort of puzzle and there's a race around the house. And in the book, the first person to actually kind of solve the puzzle, like today, Ronnie finding the TV in the attic, or last week, Cam finding the doorknob that shocked him. Then the moment the first person to solve it, a bell goes off, and then everybody has to go back to kind of their starting point, and that means that round is over. And there's even scenes in the book where they're having dinner, and they literally, you know, Giles announces that one of the characters did the best job of their accusation, and in that case, actually, the person who made the accusation has to explain how it was done, and they pass out scared and spared cards. So the book, beat for beat, the game in the book mirrors the game that's being played out on TV. And if anything, it just cemented for me more that this is kind of a how-done-it. And the murders in the book, it's everyone's just really trying to figure out what are the clues they're missing, what's not so obvious. The fact that, Sherry wasn't actually electrocuted. The fact that Adriana didn't blow herself up and that it wasn't a trap like that. I thought that was interesting. And there is kind of an allusion, and I won't go, there is a kind of reference at the end of the story that this may be continuing for Giles. And the fact that there is another whodunit, I believe it is a murder on Mystery Island that's coming out at the end of August.
Okay. So let me ask you, Kurt, since you have seen how the end game goes of whodunit, one, is the killer revealed to be one of the contestants in the book?
Yes. Yes, they are.
And is it the same killer that is the killer of whodunit, the TV show?
I'm going to plead the fifth on that one. I'll say there is... Anybody who reads the book will note that the killer in the book has... There's certain similarities between the killer and a particular contestant, but I'm going to leave it at that.
Okay.
But it does say that kind of when it gets down to just three people, the way it would be interesting if this is how it works out in the, like in the mole, that was kind of like the key thing. One of you will win, one of you will lose, one of you is the mole. Here it even says, by sunrise, there'll be a winner, a loser, and a killer. Which is to say, I will have killed one of you, and the other will finally be free to leave. But this will be no ordinary challenge. I have cherry-picked some of my favorite clues from the other murders to incorporate into this last game. You remaining three will be tasked with using these clues to piece together everything in order to finally figure out who done it. So I wonder if we're going to see, like on Survivor, how we kind of have that uber challenge toward the end. It incorporates lots of the previous challenges. I wonder if there's going to be some uber mystery at the end of whodunit that incorporates several of the clues from the preceding murders.
Right. This is also a cool thing from the whodunit website that the facts for episode 3 just went live. So I could tell you, Kurt, and to answer our earlier question, that Adriana was watching Rock of Love 3, and also Bret Michaels was in the process of eliminating Britannia from his tour of love. And the connection is that the show Rock of Love is another show produced by show creator Chris Abrego.
Oh.
So that is the common link.
I did not know that.
Yeah. All right. So you ready for a couple of questions here? I can't believe we are almost an hour talking about whodunit.
Let's do it.
Okay, here we go. How about from Matt Schmalz, at Matt Schmalster on Twitter. He wants to know, what alliance is best for Lindsay to partner with? Do you think Lindsay is better off now or with the Cool Cam gang?
I think that the the larger alliance is going to have a couple smaller alliances within it. So I think it's going to be probably in her best interest to go with the seven, but to figure out to kind of play off the distrust of Ronnie and potentially join up a little bit more explicitly with some of the people who feel left out, like Dana and potentially Sasha.
Okay. This is an excellent question from Chris Berger at Duke Forest on Twitter. Wants to know, where did the killer find so many blank VHS tapes in 2013? Yeah.
That actually is a great question.
It's a great question. Probably easier to find a Bobcat than about 50 VHS tapes.
Oh, easy. Radio Shack. Come on.
I don't know. You might find six, not 50. Now, did all of the tapes have a clue on the inside of them?
It looked like they did. It actually looked like they did. Because I think that the first one that Ronnie opened up, he saw the clue. Although we didn't, and so I'm guessing that they were all, I guess that's just an assumption on my part. Because it looked like the first one that Ronnie kind of tore open, he saw the clue there. We didn't, I don't know if we necessarily saw the cool kids getting that same clue. But my assumption was that all of the videotapes had that written on the inside.
Okay. Let's see. This is from Dan Weirdalak. He wants to know, is Don's death by Mountain Lion going to be the best murder we see this season? Giles' recap is going to be amazing.
I'm looking forward to all sorts of feline puns next week. I think we were a little bit light on the potential explosion and golf puns this
yes.
week.
Yes.
I think in terms of the, I would have liked to have seen the mountain lion be what was chasing Adriana out to the golf cart, and I do have to go back and say I was emphatically wrong about the explosion being caused by Giles's low jacked a similar bracelet that
theory.
Blew up the golf. It was a good theory, but in terms of the best death, if the previews for next week are any indication of what the next death might be, then. This might be the best death. I really want to stop watching the previews because I do like being surprised by stuff, and I'm a little unsurprised by next week already.
All right. Jonathan Collins at JohnJohn25 wants to know, is this show too smart for people, or are people too smart for this show? What do you think? Very heady question. Are people too smart for this show, or is this show too smart for people? Maybe he's asking why this show has not resonated with, by and large, the American public.
I think many people just don't get it. They're assuming it's another reality show, but they're not. So that might just turn them off immediately.
Too high concept, I think, for ABC.
Right. It's similar. Like The Mole was at least a little bit more centered in on game show. I think this is a little bit more like the 2001's Murder in Small Town X. Again, where it's heavily populated by improv actors, and you're investigating, people's houses as they're out being distracted by other contestants. And I really liked Murder in Small Town X, and I kind of like this for some of the same reasons. But again, I think it's a little high concept. Although I will say that I love riddles and puzzles myself, and I'm not doing a great job of solving the riddles and puzzles on this show. And the same with the riddles in the book. I was like, no idea how anybody would necessarily get that. So, like the last week, the look above the cycles, I would never have thought to look above a washing machine.
Yeah. I think for a show to be a hit reality show, I think you have to be able to explain it in one sentence. And I don't think that whodunit is clear. Like, I think you need to be able to say what it is And, you know, most people will be like, oh, okay, I get it. And this show is, okay, they're looking for a killer, but they, and then the person gets killed, but they don't really die, and they gotta look for the clues. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's, you know, people are just, you know, for the average viewer of TV is, you know, not up for things that are that high concept.
Right. Yeah. This show,
and we'll talk about that more when we get to Siberia.
Yeah, I like the idea of how a show needs an elevator speech. Like, and the simpler the better. And this show is more of like an escalator speech, a very slow moving escalator speech. That you need a lot of time to explain.
It's a singing competition. You know, it's be the last person left on the island, or you know, it's very complicated.
Right. And at the end of the entire description, you have to say, but don't worry, they don't really die.
Yeah. Lots of people still feeling like the people are dead.
Yep.
Yeah. So, and realityblurred.com has done a great job of chronicling that. Okay, so this is from at Chris J. King. He wants to know, I'm confused by this show. If Lindsay chose Chris as the murderer and did the best, doesn't that make Chris the killer?
No, it's just like getting an 85 or a 90% on a quiz and doing better than everybody else in the class. There's still that gap. It's not like they got the perfect score.
Okay.
It goes back to the fact that they are taking a hidden written exam. I think one of the reasons I think they don't show that is going back to the book, they don't talk about that at all. People go into a room and make accusations. So I'm wondering if the book was almost a proof of concept for the show, and they're just trying to kind of stick to that. But I think it's possible, just like on The Mole, you don't have to, the person who does the best on the quiz doesn't mean they get it all right.
All right, John Norton, host of the Tribe podcast, he writes, The Mole, this show is not. Oh, well, unless Whodunit Killer ends up being revealed as Anderson Cooper, I'm disappointed. I think Anderson Cooper has already fulfilled his quota of surprise appearances as the guy who was marrying Stefan in the SNL finale. So I don't think we'll be seeing another surprise Anderson Cooper appearance.
Yeah, I'm wondering if we have to also kind of go with, like, looking at New School Mole, Mole 3, or, you know, the celebrity moles, the fact that, you know, maybe comparing it to those non-Anderson Cooper seasons might be the way to go.
Yeah.
Still an entertaining show, but the first couple seasons of The Mole were a pinnacle.
John Norton loves The Mole. He loves it. All right, then last question from Chris Berger. He wants to know, any chance that Don faked his own death and Rob is still right? There's no way a puma takes out an armed frying pan Don. Do we think that there's a chance that Don could have survived the puma attack?
I'm going to guess no.
Probably not, right?
His back was to the puma, the cougar, the mountain lion, the bobcat, whatever you want to call it. I'm sure we'll find out next week what it is. And he was really focused on grilling up that steak. And I do wonder, I have to assume that Don, what do you think? Did Don know he was going to die? Was he prepped by the producers when he came in and sat
like
at the table?
Don walked right into that one.
Right.
You know, if it was me, again, after we've established, you know, Dante, the killer says, oh, this will protect you from the fire. Dante does what the killer says. He ends up in flames. The clue for Adriana, drive off the property if you want to live, ends up taking her into a booby-trapped golf cart. Don gets served a raw steak at formal breakfast. He says, oh, I'll just go bring this into the kitchen. And it seems like he really was not thinking clearly.
Right. I believe Dana's steak was raw too. I thought I'd have to go back and check, but this is almost a little bit more like Scream, where it's like never go walk off and say I'll be right back. Or I think it was even in Murder in Small Town X, where it's like always be with your investigative partner, or you might get bumped off by the killer. And then there was even another reality show, The Colony, which recreated life in a post-apocalyptic society where they brought like 16 people together to basically live in a warehouse, and one of the rules was never go off alone, and one of the players went off alone and actually was removed from the game by the producers, and it had a devastating effect on the rest of the people playing the game. So never go off alone.
Okay.
Never.
All right. So poor Don, he's gone. We'll talk about the Puma at some point next week, and we'll figure out exactly when we're going to schedule the next Whodunit podcast. I'm going back to New York next weekend, so our regular timetable is going to be screwed up. So Kurt and I will talk about that offline. Let's talk about real quick about Siberia. Okay. I know we've gone so long with Whodunit, but so if you, for the uninitiated, Siberia is a show that's on NBC, which, you know, I was really thrown for a curveball here because I watched it. 16 people taken to Siberia. The last person standing will win. But curveball, it's a la the Blair Witch Project. It is not a real reality show, and very confusing. Because people are getting killed on this show also, and they are very much wanting you to believe that this is a real show.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting that they kind of set it up for deaths to happen, because they said, like, I think the promo for it was no tribal councils, no one gets voted off. It's really that the $500,000 prize gets divided amongst whoever is left at the end of whatever the period of the show is. So it's one of those situations where if you are the last person standing, you get $500,000. If there's 10 of you standing, you each get $50,000. So there is incentive there for the quote-unquote players to mess with each other. But I knew, like I with Blair Witch, I knew going into this that this was a dramatized reality show. And I've kind of said several times to folks about this. To me, this is kind of an overlap between Survivor and Lost.
See,
and they're really just...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I did not know that this was a fake reality show. And I watched the first half, and I said, okay, this is interesting. And then I found out before I'd watched the second half that it was a fake reality show. And the second half really becomes very over the top. But so, Kurt, did this work for you? Did you enjoy Siberia?
I actually did. One of my friends had reminded me that it was starting that Monday night. He reminded me early that day, and I was like, "Oh, I'll check it out." And it's interesting because it capitalizes on what we all know from classic reality TV and uses that as a base to tell a larger story. So we're familiar with the 16 contestants. That premise. Oh, in this case, they're not all from the U.S. I mean, you've got someone from, you had someone from Iceland, a model from Australia, some guy
very attractive people for a reality show. I will say for sort of like the, this is not like the cast that you would expect on some reality show you never heard of. This is a very attractive group of people participating.
Very well put together.
Participating in the Siberia.
Right. And so it's... I'm curious where it goes. And without giving anything away from how the first episode ends, to me it had a very... It's just had a very Lost feel.
Yeah, well, the tagline for the show was called... The show ended with, like, the tagline, "Get Lost in Reality." So I think that the elevator pitch for this show is... it's like, imagine Survivor taking place on the Lost Island. And basically, the production is getting out of hand, and it's getting a little, like, Cloverfield-esque, where things are spiraling out of control. And, you know, the show is breaking down. But yet we're still seeing things formatted as if it was a reality show.
There's still confessionals. And even though something bad happens at the end of the first one, I mean, the host announces, you know, you're all welcome to leave if you wish. You'll be given this amount of a stipend if you do. But if you do wish to stay, we will continue filming.
Do you think they made a calculated mistake by promoting this as if it was a reality show? I feel like they did.
Yeah, I I think that would have immediately turned a large number of people off. Whereas if you had promoted it as I think, you know, I'm just kind of looking at news clips about it right now, and like one article builds it as a horror reality drama. That might have, you know, pushing a little bit more the drama side of things might have brought more people in. But
yeah, I think that they presented this horribly wrong, because I think the person who would be interested in this isn't necessarily the person who would watch a reality show.
Right. And something that's interesting, I guess the title of the second episode is A Question of Reality. So I do know, I did see some people posting on Twitter and Facebook, much like Whodunit, one thinking that this was real.
Yeah. And I think it's going to be, it's people, just like a little bit with the Whodunit, I think people are confused, and, you know, it's network TV, and we just can't give, you know, people too much credit in mass. I think individually, people are very smart, but as a whole, people are lazy and uninformed, and like, what is this? I don't understand what this is. And rather than try to figure out what this is, people are going to, you know, flip the channel.
Right.
Whereas opposed to marketing it as this is the sci-fi event of the summer on NBC, you know, you've never seen anything like this. If you liked Cloverfield, if you liked, you know, all, you know, and marketed it that way, I think that would have been the better way to go.
But it's going up against Under the Dome on, I believe, CBS is the
channel.
Yeah,
questionable spot also. It seems like NBC just didn't know what to do with this show.
Right. And especially that Under the Dome, I think, was being promoted much more heavily and in advance
for
a longer period.
Did you like UTD?
What was it? Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's one of the ones where I wasn't sure if I was going to like it or not, and I decided I'd give it 4 episodes. I'll give anything 4 episodes. And 2 episodes into Under the Dome, I'm not thinking that I will walk away from it after 4. I guess that's a long way of saying I'm probably going to stick with it.
Yeah, I've been watching the Under the Dome as well, and while I certainly have some issues with it, I've somewhat enjoyed it. A little soapier than The Lost, but interesting.
Cut back on a couple of the unnecessary storylines and tighten it up, but otherwise it's good.
Okay, well, I'm sure we could do another easily another half an hour on Siberia. So Siberia, I will still be checking it out, and if it proves interesting, I will be talking more about Siberia, and if it gets dumb, I probably won't bring it up again.
Sounds fair.
See which way it goes. Okay. Kurt Clark, at Kurt Clark on Twitter. He loves to take your theories about whodunit. And been getting a good response from people on the Whodunit podcast.
Yeah, it's nice to see people. I think there's even a tweet today that went out at, you know, asking if we were going to do it, and that they love the podcast. And so thanks everybody for the support, and keep your questions and comments coming.
Okay, and if you want to read the Whodunit book, I believe you could read the first 5 chapters for free on ABC.com. If you want the full book on Kindle, it costs $3.03 on Amazon. You can go there directly and support Rob as a podcast when you go to the link robhasawebsite.com/whodunit, just check that it's spelled like the TV show, no question mark.
And you can even pre-order the second book coming out in late August.
Did you
What was that?
Did you pre-order the second book?
No, I haven't. I'm just actually reading the description now. And 10 excited coworkers arrive at the beautiful resort on a remote island in the middle of the Caribbean, saying that they've been rewarded for their hard work and productivity, but their relaxing tropical getaway soon turns into a murderous nightmare. And guess who is there? Giles.
Oh, Giles. That Giles. All right. Well, at least his bomb strapped to his leg, his ankle bracelet, appears to have allowed him to travel.
Correct.
That's the thing.
And unless he's completely flipped out and is, after all of these incidents where he is surrounded by murder and mayhem, I'm guessing he is not the killer in our Whodunit TV show.
And the killer is Bret Michaels.
The killer is Bret Michaels. Or actually, the It might actually be the Bobcat. The Bobcat has been orchestrating everything.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see exactly what happens next week on Whodunit. Kurt Clark, thank you very much.
Thank you, Rep.
Yeah, and if you haven't listened to our Big Brother podcast from tonight, we had a great chat with Brian Lynch. We investigated the Big Brother happenings as much as we did the murders taking place at Rue Manor. Check that out all at robhasawebsite.com. Next podcast coming is Big Brother Eviction Night this Thursday. Have a great week, everybody, and we'll talk to you again soon. Take care, everybody. Bye.